Good afternoon. This is a slight deviation from operator algebras, but hopefully you'll enjoy it. And this is joint work with Ed Azoff at the University of Georgia and Ruben Martinez, who's a postdoc at Michigan State. And what I'm going to show today, or discuss, is reflexivity of hyperspaces in the full space of Hankel operators. And it turns out that these hyperspaces are determined by H1 functions, and the way you determine reflexivity of these hyperspaces is looking at the canonical factorization of these H1 functions. So I'd first like to start with a little background. So throughout the talk, S is going to be a linear space of B of H, the bounded operators on a Hilbert space. And the preannihilator of S is given by the set of trace class operators, such that the trace of AT is equal to 0 for every operator A in S. And then we'll define the reflexive closure of S to be the set of all operators in B of H, such that BF is in the closure of SF for every vector F and H. And with a little bit of work, you can show that this set is also equal to the pre-annihilator of S intersected with the rank 1s, and then take the annihilator of that. And we define the reflexive closure of S, or S to be reflexive if it's equal to its reflexive closure. And one way to think about reflexive closure is that if an operator belongs to it locally, then it must belong to the space S. And also, if an operator B is not in the reflexive closure, then almost by definition, you can find a rank 1 operator which separates it from the set S. And this is equivalent to S perp intersect the rank 1s being total in S perp. And the last definition for reflexivity, or for the background, is S is elementary if the pre-annihilator plus the rank 1s is all the trace class. And so pretty much given a trace class operator, you can perturb it by a rank 1 to get something in the pre-annihilator. And it also tells you a little bit about the internal structure of S. If you have a closed subspace in S and a point outside of that closed subspace in S, then you can separate them with a rank 1 operator. And we'll use this fact in a little bit. So next I'd like to define Hankel operators. I guess there's many different ways to do it, but we'll say an operator H in B of H2 is Hankel if S star H equals HS, where S is just a shift operator. And this is just the Hardy space on the disk. And an alternate way to define a Hankel operator is to think of it as a susquilinear form. So if you have phi and L infinity, and if you look at the map that takes FG to this complex number, this is a bounded susquilinear form. Here G star is just the conjugate of G of Z bar. So it's an operator on the Hilbert space. And it's pretty easy to see that when you restrict F and G to ZM, or ZM and ZN, that the cross diagonals are going to be equal. And you can do the same thing for triplets operators. Just replace the G star with the conjugate of G. And up to scalar multiples, the most general rank 1 operator has this form here. And we'll use that later in the talk to show that one way to show that a space of Hankel operators is not reflexive is to find a non-Hankel operator in its reflexive closure. And we'll use this fact here that these are the only rank 1s. Okay. So a little connection between the elementary and full space of Hankel operators is the following. We have that the full space of Hankel operators, which I'll denote by Hank, is elementary and transitive. And Transitive is basically just saying that it's as far away from being reflexive as possible. The reflexive closure is all of B of H. Or there's no rank one operators in the pre-annihilator. To see that it's elementary isn't that difficult. If we pick T in the pre-annihilator of the full space of Hankel operators, we can write it as a countable sum of rank ones. These FIGIs are all in H2, so FIGI star is in H1. So we can find an F naught and a G naught in H2 satisfying this equality. And therefore, this is our rank one operator, which agrees with T on all the full space of Hank. And this really relies on the fact, I'll omit that. So, and to see that it's transitive, if you have a rank one inside the pre-annihilator of the full space of Hankel operators, and that tells you that this integral is equal to zero for every L infinity function, which is going to tell you that FG star is equal to zero almost everywhere, which tells you that either F is equal to zero almost, or either F is zero on a set of positive measure, or G star is zero on a set of positive measure. Therefore, they have to be zero. So now we get the hyperspaces. So you take a H1 function, and then it determines a hyperspace in the full space of Hankel operators by this formula, just HV in here, and just this integral is equal to zero. And you can also see from the previous formula that the only rank ones in the pre-annihilator have to be scalar multiples of this function U for some lambda in C. Okay, is that all I want to say? Yes. Okay, so for the main theorem, we have the following. Let U be an H1 and consider its canonical factorization, where beta is a Blaschke product, alpha is an atomic singular inner function, sigma is a non-atomic singular inner function, and omega is an outer function. And this isn't the usual, it's not fair to call it the canonical factorization, but to state the theorem, it's easier to separate the singular inner function into its atomic and non-atomic part. So the first part of the theorem, we have that C sub U is reflexive if and only if C sub beta, C sub alpha, C sub sigma, and C omega are reflexive. If U is an outer function, then we have that C omega is always reflexive. If U is a Blaschke product, then it's reflexive if and only if beta has no repeated roots. If U is an atomic singular inner function, then it's reflexive only when alpha is the trivial inner function 1. And unfortunately, the last part, we're still working on. That's the missing link. And I'll discuss that in a little bit. First, I'd like to go through a proof of number 3, and or outline of number 3, and an outline of 2, and then when I get towards the end, I'll discuss some ideas on this, even though we don't have any. So one tool that we use in determining whether these hyperspaces are reflexive or not is the following proposition. So if we have M, a linear space of the full space of Hankel operators, which is weak star closed, then M is reflexive if and only if the reflexive closure of M is contained in the full space of Hankel operators. And this, there's nothing special about the full space of Hankel operators. This is true for any space S which is elementary. This proof is exactly the same. So just to reinforce all this, if we want to show that a weak star closed linear space M of the full space is reflexive, all we have to do is take something in the reflexive closure and show that it has to be a Hankel operator. And likewise, to show that a space is non-reflexive, we pick something in the reflexive closure and show that it's not a Hankel operator. And we'll use both. We'll use one and two for part three, and then we'll use one for number two. So this is, we'll prove the only if part. Maybe I should. Well, we're going to prove the only if part of number three here. That if C sub beta is reflexive, then beta has no repeated roots. So proposition, if we fix an A in the disk, then the non-Hankel operator up here given by 1 over 1 minus AZ, tensor with Z over 1 minus A bar Z squared, is perpendicular to every rank 1 operator F tensor G for which F G star has a repeated root at A. And the proof is just Cauchy's integral formula. If you expand out this inner product, it turns out to be that. If F G star has a repeated root, then either F of A has a repeated root or G of A is zero. And the corollary is that if the Blaschke product of beta has a multiple root, then the hyperspace C sub beta is not reflexive. So let's suppose, I guess there should be an E there, suppose beta has a multiple root at A in the disk, and let F tensor G be in the pre-annihilator of C sub beta. Well, that's true if and only if FG star equals beta. So by the above proposition, we have that this rank 1 operator is in the reflexive closure, but we know that it's non-Hankel. So the space is not reflexive. Okay, so before proving the other half, I'd like to go back and look at, let's see. I sort of did some rearranging when I did these, and after rearranging it, realized I shouldn't have. So before proving the if half of number three, I'd like to prove number two, and we'll just do it for a specific outer function. We'll do it for the outer function, which is constantly 1. So let's just check that C sub 1 is reflexive. And we're just going to show that if something's in the reflexive closure of this space, then it has to be a Hankel operator. So let B be in the reflexive closure of C sub 1. And if I can show that these two inner products are equal for all n, then that's going to tell me that the first two rows of the matrix have the right form to be a Hankel operator. This guy here is picking off the nth entry in the first row. This guy here is picking off the n minus 1 entry in the second row. And I want to show that these two are equal. Okay. So the one thing to notice is that for any A in the interval minus 1 to 1, this operator is in the perp. It's in the perp because the product of these two functions is equal to 1. And that's exactly what it means to be in the perp. So we can expand this expression, and we get that this guy is in the perp. And then just differentiating, repeatedly differentiating and substituting in A equals 0, we get that each one of these are in the perp for all n. And that's precisely, well, that means that B is perpendicular to these, and when you expand this out, you get this here. And in the general case, when you have an arbitrary H1 function up here, which is outer, you really use the fact that you can factor the H1 function into two H2 functions, which are also outer. And then that, so there's some subtle things going on here that I haven't mentioned. Okay. So now for the other half of number three, I apologize for bouncing around like that. We're going to need Burling's theorem, and that every ideal I in H infinity, which is closed in the weak star topology, takes the form theta H infinity for some inner function theta. And a corollary of that is if we have a family of inner functions and we look at, let theta denote the least common multiple, then if C sub phi is reflexive for each phi in the family, then we have that C sub theta is reflexive. And that's going to allow us to prove the corollary that if beta is a Blaschke product with no repeated roots, then C sub beta is reflexive. So here's just an outline. For a single Blaschke factor, we can show that C sub BA is reflexive. This requires a little bit of work. So now I'm going to let beta or B be in the reflexive closure of C sub beta, and then for each root of A, or each root A of beta, we have that this operator is in the reflexive closure of C B sub A. And you can just write that out, and it's not that difficult. And since this space is reflexive, we know that it has to be contained in the Hankel operators, and therefore this is a Hankel operator. The ideal I, where it's all theta inner functions such that BT sub theta is a Hankel operator, is weak star closed. But since beta doesn't have any repeated roots, we know the greatest common divisor is 1. That tells us that the ideal is all of H infinity. In particular, 1 is in the ideal. So B equals BT1, which is a Hankel operator. That's it for this side. Oh, and the last thing over here is that once you know, if we can finish up the non-atomic singular inner function, once you know all the hyperspaces, you get all the subspaces. And that's given by, you just have M is a weak closed linear space of the full space of Hankels. R is going to be the greatest common divisor of the inner factors of the H1 functions U, such that M is contained in C sub U. And then it turns out that M is reflexive if and only if C sub R is reflexive. Okay. And then the last thing we have, I don't know if this is going to work or not, is just some stuff we did in other dimensions. Prior to Ruben jumping aboard, Ed and I were doing everything in the triplet setting in the finite and semi-infinite, and we were always doing these weird things like multiplying by the conjugate of z to the n and then taking the conjugate again, and we were just avoiding translating everything to the Hankel setting. And and Ed remembered he got a dissertation from some guy who did Hankel operators, and it's made life much easier. So in the finite setting, which I just mean the m by n matrices, in the semi-infinite, where you just have m by infinite matrices, in the infinite, you always have that the full space is elementary and transitive. The hyperspaces in the finite dimensional setting are parameterized by the polynomials. In the semi-infinite, we have they're parameterized by the H2 functions. And as we saw earlier in the infinite dimensional setting, they're parameterized by the H1 functions. In the finite dimensional setting, a hyperspace is reflexive if and only if the polynomial has no repeated roots and it's the right degree. And I won't go into that right now. And in the semi-infinite, it's reflexive if and only if the function h is a Blaschke product times an outer. And again, the Blaschke product can't have any repeated roots. The infinite is what we discussed today. And in the finite case, there's no separating vector. The vector 1 is a strictly separating vector, and 1 separates, but not strictly, in the infinite. And then last, just to compare this with some of the work with Azoff and Patak, just to compare the Hankel and Toeplitz operators in infinite dimensions, the Hankel and the Toeplitz, both full spaces, are transitive. Again, the hyperspaces and the Hankels are determined by the H1 functions. Hyperspaces in the triplets are the L1 functions. We have somethings in the pre-annihilator if and only if FG star is equal to U, and in the triplets, F, the conjugate of G, is equal to phi. Here's where the triplets operator is coming into play. In the Hankel setting, no hyperspace is transitive. In the triplets, there exist transitive hyperspaces, and in fact, they're either transitive or reflexive. C sub U is reflexive if and only if what we discussed today. And in the triplet setting, a space is reflexive if and only if it's not transitive. And then last, the full space of Hankel operators is elementary, and the full space of triplet operators is not elementary. So that's my talk. Thanks. Thank you.